Hello there, Mark O'Donnell with Operations Excellence here with our next, I believe this is episode 4. Is that correct, Michael?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Yes, Mark, that is correct. We are on episode 4. You are officially a star at this point.
And for those of you who are new to the podcast, Mike Brindisi is our producer. He does the magic behind the board. Michael, you the man.
You're the man, buddy. I'm just here to facilitate you being the man. That's all.
We were joking before we started today how you make me look good, and that must be magic. So I appreciate that. I really do.
Well, it takes a little bit of work. I'm kidding. You're beautiful.
A lot of work. All right, folks. So today our first guest in episode 4 is Stephanie Zumbel from Abacus Grant Services. Stephanie, welcome.
Thank you.
So good to have you here.
Excellent to be here.
Knowing you now for, I want to say, about 4 or 5 months,
yes.
I want to say, something like that, right?
Yes. Yep.
So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and
sure.
Abacus Grant Services.
Sure. So I've been working in the grant space for 27 years now. It's kind of embarrassing to say that number. But it's been a long time, and I've worked I started out in academia, got my beginnings at SUNY ESF, a little plug. And I worked for a professor, a project investigator who won a big grant for New York City Water Supply Watershed, looking at water quality in the area north of the city that supplies New York City with their drinking water. And I was hooked. Project management to grant administration to reporting. I ended up working on that project through a bachelor's degree and a master's degree, and then continuing on into the grant space through biomedical research, engineering, construction, in the world of students with disabilities at Onondaga Community College.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've ended up in the drone space.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, you mentioned project management, grant management, servicing. I know you also will go find grants and connect people with grant money that is out there and then actually help them by writing the application.
That's really
to
the
secure
fun
the
of it.
Grant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so
the
talk
fun
a little bit about that part because I'm fascinated. This is a world I knew nothing about until we met.
Yeah. So I help small businesses identify funding that can help take them from the idea phase through research and development and then commercialization and on to ideally non-dilutive funding, which means that it's money, just free money to do with what they need to grow their business and get their business to commercialization. Of course, there are complexities to receiving grant dollars because you have to report and you have to follow the parameters that you set in your proposal. So it's not all easy, but I can actually help with that reporting part too. Just walk the client through the entire process of having a new idea, getting funding to develop it, and then commercialize it and get it into the market.
So you mentioned non-diluted funds, and I'm sure there are some grants that are diluted.
Well,
talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, so when I say non-dilutive, I mean that it's money that's going towards your company that doesn't take away any of your ownership.
Right.
So a lot of times when people are looking for funding, they'll go to a venture capitalist. And when you start talking about venture capital monies, oftentimes you're giving up some of your ownership of the company and your ideas.
Because they're literally buying into the company.
Correct.
Right.
So this type of funding, this governmental funding, doesn't come with any ownership for the most part. I mean, there are some grants where your intellectual property comes into play, but that's another service that I provide for clients to help them navigate their intellectual property and make sure that they're not losing out on any of their discoveries.
Right, right. Now, you do work for mostly for-profits, but you've done some work as well for not-for-profits and other organizations.
I really cut my teeth in the non-for-profit
right
world and in the academic world. And it's a lot harder. In my opinion, you have to work a lot harder in the nonprofit world because money isn't as available. You know, you're not commercializing anything. You're really just building out services. And it's from administration to administration, priorities change. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes the nonprofit sector gets hit first.
Right.
For you know, a multitude of reasons, but it's definitely more fun
right.
to work in that private sector world, in okay. startups especially.
Why is that for you? Why is it more fun in the for-profit space?
Because the ideas are new. The technology is cutting edge.
Right.
We're advancing new ways of doing things. That's where I really have the most fun because I'm always learning something new and I get to be a part of new ideas and approaches to,
right.
to you know, get things done and move things with drones.
Right.
Detect drones in the air.
Right.
Yeah.
So for those who are listening or viewing our podcast, who would be your, what would your ideal client today look like?
My ideal client would be a client who has an idea and is manufacturing something,
mm-hmm.
a widget.
Okay. The
infamous widget.
Yes.
On a small scale.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking to scale. And maybe up to this point in time, they haven't had any outside funding,
right.
any governmental funding,
right.
any venture capital funding,
right.
and take that client and their idea and build out a compelling story or use case to apply this widget, and ideally in both the private sector, but also the defense sector.
Okay.
Because dual use is an easy sell to get Department of Defense money right now, as long as it's supporting something that the Department of Defense, Air Force, Army is trying to do in the battlefield.
Right.
I would say in the defense sector, that's where I'm really kind of playing right now and having the most fun. And taking that organization and trying to find funding that fits their long-term strategy and help them really to scale to a space where they can commercialize their widget.
Right.
And sell it via a contract with a federal government. And then along the way, maybe leverage that federal funding to get private sector contracts as well.
Right.
But I focus mostly on grants.
Mm-hmm.
But I have enough connections and network and a deep enough network, a deep enough bench in the private sector world where I could help them navigate private funding too, if it
yeah,
fits.
Yeah, and for our listeners, I first got connected with Stephanie by a mutual friend because I had a client who happens to be an ambulance service here locally who was looking for a grant for a new ambulance. And I reached out to this friend of mine and said, hey, do you know any grant writers? You need to talk to Stephanie right
yeah.
away. And he gave me your contact information. And so I know you've worked with and successfully
yes.
worked with that ambulance company.
Yes. Yeah.
And I also turned you on to a couple other clients of
yes.
mine. I know one who is a local owner of a small manufacturing firm who is doing some real estate development.
Mm-hmm.
So those are very different.
Yeah.
spaces. And the thing that fascinates me is you mentioned this bench depth that you know these people. How did you build this network of people you know on where to go to get grants for all these different types of things and organizations?
I've been working in Central New York in so many different companies with so many different networks of people.
Right.
That I just have this incredible network of people that I know, and I won't say no to anything. And I welcome the opportunity to move into a space where I'm not completely familiar.
Right.
Because really what drives me is learning new things.
Yep.
I always it's actually part of the reason why I started my own company,
mm-hmm.
is because sitting in one sector,
right,
in one industry, with one job, is incredibly boring,
right,
for me.
You know, it's fascinating to hear you say that, because one of the many things that I love about what I do now is exactly what you just hit on. Right. I spent most of my adult life in manufacturing. Right. I'm one of them people that I love manufacturing. I love to make things. I love to be a part of making things. And if you had asked me 3.5 years ago when I started my business, who would be most of your clients, I would have naturally said, oh, probably manufacturers.
Right.
I do some work with manufacturers and I love them. But they're not the majority of my clients today. And that actually has been a godsend, because like you, I love learning.
Yeah.
Right. So every time I get into a new type of organization, even if it's not for profit, i.e. like the ambulance group, right?
Yeah.
It's funny, because there are things specific to that industry that are new and you learn. But at the end of the day, there's so many similarities. Doesn't matter what you do, what your service or product is, right? It's still about people, process, strategy, and you know, you're probably dealing with a lot of that in people you're dealing with.
That's exactly it. I mean, there is a commonality to most all grants, whether it's state or federal. There are guidelines and rules and regulations that determine how you can spend your money and on what you can spend your money and how to document that.
Right.
It's the same kind of reporting requirements for state-level grants and for federal-level grants.
Right.
And that's really the common thread through all of my clients, because I too love manufacturing. But I also love, you know, workforce development and Department of Labor stuff. But there's a commonality between that, because you create efficiencies and effectiveness in a manufacturing environment.
Mm-hmm.
And you're likely to oftentimes with these manufacturing projects add jobs, which creates another avenue of potential, you know, grant funding or tax rebates, based on the fact that you can hire additional people to fill your, you know, jobs that are created when you add efficiencies to your manufacturing.
Right, right.
So yeah. I've been a part of these large scale public private partnerships, across in multiple states that involve. You know, it's not just a drone company, but it's a drone company in a hospital and, you know, a drone company and the Department of Transportation. So with each project that I touch and depending on how complex it is, I introduce myself to another field, another sector, another world.
Right. And we talked earlier about you building that vast network. And I'm sure a big reason you have been able to successfully build a network like that is because, like me, you succeed when your client succeeds.
Yeah.
And guess what? When you do it well for them and they're not only able to meet their expectations but exceed them, they become your biggest fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And now if a guy like me calls them because they happen to know them and say, do you know a grant writer? You absolutely need to talk to Stephanie.
Yeah.
And that was the response I got, right? Yeah. Like there was not another name or a phone number. It was, this is the person you need to talk to.
Yeah.
Because obviously you had that impact on that individual like you have others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun. I mean, and I don't broadcast successes very easily, just because I walk in and I am not the subject matter expert.
Right.
I am just a person who pulls together a compelling story and follows all the rules to the letter and creates these proposals and launches them off, you know, into whatever sponsoring agency that might be.
Right.
And then from there, I kind of walk away and hope for the best. Sometimes I'll have work afterwards and handle reporting and post-award stuff. But oftentimes, I'm just like, you know, good job, guys, and walk away.
Right. But I would throw this back at you. I would say you are the subject matter expert on the grant world. And the people you're dealing with, like, you know, when I sat on the other side of the desk and I've been in companies where we had grants and things like that for certain development projects, whether it was building a new plant or expanding an existing plant, right?
Yeah.
We didn't know anything about that world, right? So we needed a subject matter expert in the grant world. So you are. You might not be on the widget. Which, if anybody out there knows what a widget is, please tell us. We're still trying to figure that out. The age-old question.
Yeah. Right?
But you are the subject matter expert, that is what you bring to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, I guess you're right. Yeah.
So I know you've seen some significant growth in the past couple of years, especially in the past few months. You've had a lot of good stuff going on.
Yeah.
So where does Abacus Grant Services go from here? What do you see the future look like in the next 6 months, year, 3, 5 years?
So I just left my full-time gig.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I am entirely self-employed now. And I have a team that I'm building slowly. I just hired a fractional CFO.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's fun and exciting. And I see myself just growing and expanding into, I'm starting to pick up work that's falling outside of the States, which is really exciting. And so I see
international.
Correct.
Yeah.
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 So I see Abacus growing to an international kind of ecosystem and landscape. And I see my network of people growing even more. And I'm really excited with the work that I'm doing. A lot of what I'm doing right now is trying to bring deep supply chains and manufacturing into the States.
Mm-hmm.
And tapping into, you know, federal and statewide resources and helping to create an environment where the widget that was once produced in another country can come stateside,
mm-hmm.
and we can start making things domestically so that when we're trying to build a drone,
right,
it can be the entire supply chain, we can trace all the way down to the last final piece, and it's all entirely American made.
Right.
And along that way, finding funding to build out manufacturing plants all the way down the supply chain.
Right.
And keep our, you know, our...
Which is a big deal with federal contracts from a past life.
Yes.
Right? That in federal contracts, and I know... The law that governs federal contracts at one point in time, this is not too many years ago, was over 2,000 pages long. And, of course, I can't say I've ever read all 2,000 pages. We had, you know, corporate lawyers that would mm-hmm. tell me, you know, this is what you need to focus on. But one of the things we did talk about in depth was a certain percentage of the finished product. And we literally had to supply a bill of materials where every component came from. But a certain percentage, I want to say it was 60 or 70%, something in that neighborhood, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. had to be U.S. sourced.
It's always been a part of the conversation.
Yeah.
Especially in academia.
Yeah.
When you're spending federal dollars, mm-hmm. that there's always been talk of American made.
Right.
And I don't argue with the fact that we'd be better off to keep our supply chain deep and making things here in the States.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to support it because what drives me is, you know, job creation.
Sure.
Right. STEM and STEAM, you know, supporting programs with universities, mm-hmm. partnerships with universities to create that workforce flow, that pipeline to sure. fill the jobs.
By the way, we're still woefully short of engineers and scientists, yes. and technical, yes. people in this country.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That is a major problem.
Yeah.
But that's where I kind of get to jump in and out of so many different worlds, but it's working towards the same end.
Right. Right. I will not get political, but I think you'd be remiss if I didn't ask this question, because mm-hmm. I know you do work outside of the defense area,
yes.
in that world.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen any impact from everything that is going on as far as the availability of grant money for non-defense?
Certainly.
Yeah.
And with any change in administration, you have to be able to change with the priorities of the federal government.
Right.
This current administration is no different. And if anything, it's leveling the playing field for people in my world, because where once there were people who have been working in grants and you know, federal funding opportunities forever and ever and ever, it's all changed.
Yeah.
So you're only as good as what's happening on the Hill, you know,
right.
from day to day.
Right.
So And for me, that's something that I'm really proficient at.
Yeah.
Is following those changes and learning them fast and then just shifting with where the opportunities are. And there are clients that I was that I had been working with mm-hmm. that I stepped away as a result of there's just no more funding there for them.
Right.
But luckily enough, I was, you know, deep enough in the defense sector specifically
right.
to be able to have a diverse enough client base to be able to easily adjust to the changes.
Right. So in full disclosure, Stephanie is also a client of mine
yes.
and
yes.
has been doing some work with me. If you could.
Valuable work.
And we have not rehearsed this at all,
no,
right?
Not.
So I want to put that plug out there. But in your own words, without any prompting, what have you gained from working with me in Operations Excellence?
Honestly, I call my experience with you professional therapy. You've been my therapist.
That's fair.
You've really just worked through a lot of infrastructure in the way that I looked at my business
mm-hmm.
and kind of organized not only my thoughts, but my approach.
Right.
There are a couple of things that you've said to me that I continue to repeat in my brain all the time. It's better to be understood. No, it's better to understand than to be understood.
Yeah.
And just really put me in a place of reflection at a point in time where I was scaling at a mad pace.
Right.
And I needed to just settle in to, you know, where my expertise are, what I'm really good at. You helped me to see my strengths and put them together in a way that is clearly making a huge difference in how I run my business and my confidence in what I'm doing and the value that I add to any project that I touch.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that's incredibly valuable.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for that
yeah.
explanation.
No, thank you.
You know, we in the world I live in, we call it spinning the top.
Yeah.
Right, where I'm hoping that by probing, right, and it's really that questioning technique that now you've kind of lived through for multiple sessions.
Yeah.
It's really hopefully helping you gain some different perspective, and you absolutely
100%.
Did. And so it's been a pleasure to work with you because you were kind of at a perfect place where you knew, you just said, right, I'm drinking from the fire hose.
Mm-hmm.
I have all this opportunity, and I need to get my stuff together.
Yes.
Or this is not going to come off well.
Yes.
Right? Is that kind of where you were at when we met?
That is exactly where I was
right?
at.
But, you know, you were also very open and very honest and very willing to put yourself out there, right?
Yeah.
You didn't hold back.
Yeah.
And that makes me as a professional coach and consultant, that makes my life much easier.
Yeah.
Right? Because the harder I have to tease out, right, that kind of takes more time and it can take away time
yeah.
from helping the client really get to their solutions.
Yeah. I remember our first meeting, we were at Salt City Market.
Yes.
For coffee.
Yep.
And I remember just sitting there thinking, I knew I was just, I was a wreck. I was all over the place and trying to pull just to even understand how the growth was happening so fast.
Right.
And I knew that it was a pivotal moment in the company and in me being able to work entirely for myself.
Right.
And I knew that if I didn't pull it together, man, I was going to be working for someone else for a long
and
time.
Now you've taken that leap.
Yeah.
You're out there without a net, so to speak.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that as
yeah.
we've talked about,
yes.
right? That's the world I live in. And
yeah.
there's pros and cons, although I'm a firm believer now, almost 3.5 years in, that there's a lot more pros than cons.
Yeah.
And I love what I do, and I love the fact that I have my own business and
yeah,
everything that comes with it.
Me too.
But if there are moments, and
yeah.
it can be
for sure.
scary, can be frightening.
I trust there's a path.
Yeah. Well, but you've also taken some great strides and steps to define that path,
yeah.
right?
Well, I've had some help.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, right, like I've told you, I have a coach.
Yeah.
Right, that I talk to
yeah.
weekly. It's such a huge asset because it
right.
really is somebody that I'm accountable to.
Yeah.
Right. But it's also somebody that gets my top spinning and can help me gain new perspectives, because sometimes we're so eyeball deep in the day to day and driving it and the next client and the next, you know, whatever, that we can lose our perspective.
Yeah.
Right. And that's such a huge value. So, and it's great to see where you were and, you know, where you come from now. We were talking before we started recording today that just our last session, you walked in and it just looked like the weight of the world was off your shoulders. And I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Yeah.
This is wonderful. This is why I love doing what I do, because I get to see that.
Yeah. You know? Well, and it's the other people in my life are recognizing that.
Yeah.
There's that shift.
Right. But you made the decisions and took the action.
Yeah.
Right. The only thing I may have done was help you maybe gain some different perspective.
Yes.
And see things differently.
Yeah.
And help you make that decision to move in that direction.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yes. I'm very thankful.
Well, it's great getting to know you, and I look forward to watching you continue to grow and build this business. I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
Because you've got so many good things going on. And I know one of the things we were talking about before we came on, that literally you've got some opportunities that could be life-changing.
Yes.
Literally.
Literally.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
It's good to see good things happen to good people.
Yeah. So thank you.
Congratulations
thank
on
you
that success.
Much.
And I wish you great success going forward. And I want to thank you for coming on. I know you were a bit nervous, you know, I'll do it. But, you know, it's just a conversation.
Yeah.
Right. So I hope you've enjoyed this conversation.
It's like
as
another
much
therapy
as I have.
Session.
Yeah. Professional therapy. I don't know if I'm going to put that on my website.
I don't know. I highly recommend.
but I appreciate that, you know, because I know you say that in all positive way.
Yeah.
And,
definitely.
That's awesome. But thank you again for coming in.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Appreciate it. All right, we'll have you come on again and see where you're at in 6 months or a year. How's that? That'll be fun.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
All right. You're on. We're going to book it. That is the first half of our episode for today. Welcome to part two of episode four. And our second guest today is Steve Thompson, the founder and owner of Integrity Cost Consulting. Steve, welcome.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate being here.
So glad to have you. So, Steve, we've known each other, I thought about this morning, I think it's like 3 years or close to it now. Time flies.
Time flies, yeah.
So, for our listeners, can you tell them a little bit about Integrity Cost Consulting and what you guys do?
Yeah, sure. So, Integrity Cost Consulting, we focus on ensuring that our clients are being billed accurately and cost efficiently. So, we're a specialized cost verification, recovery, and reduction firm. And we basically do all this on a performance basis, leveraging objectivity, subject matter experts, proprietary software, and a large benchmarking database. We uncover hidden vendor billing errors and cost-saving opportunities. And most times, I'd say over 90% of the time when we're working with a client, we're going to find refunds and or savings. And in two of the four categories that we review, it's not uncommon to see 30 to 50% reduction.
Wow, that's significant.
Yeah. And actually, and I want to say too, we don't change vendors. We're not looking to change vendors. We're very objective. We don't get paid by vendors. We get paid by our clients if they realize a financial benefit.
So you only get paid if the client saves money.
Exactly. Yeah. Great. Yeah. And the whole team's like that. So it's me and all 24 of us.
Right.
It's all contingency based. Our goals are aligned with theirs.
Right.
Right. We're trying to make sure that they're paying, being billed accurately and paying the least amount possible.
Right. So you mentioned a few areas. What are the areas that you specifically focus on for your clients?
Yeah. So there's four areas. Utilities, telecom, that's phone and internet, waste disposal, so trash, recycling, medical waste, shredding. And then the most recent one we added probably about 3 or 4 years ago, the industrial laundry piece.
Okay.
So it's uniforms, floor mats, linens, towels, things like that from vendors, industrial laundry vendors.
So all those areas are ongoing, typically annual or longer contracts, and typically companies have been with the same supplier vendor for some period of time.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I like to say we focus on service-based expenses.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So how did you decide to start the business? Tell our listeners a little bit about your background before you started Integrity Cost Consulting and how you decided to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm the youngest of seven, and so cost was a very big thing in our household, right?
I get it. Yeah.
Had to be very cost conscious.
I'm from a family of seven, too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. So my dad was always looking for ways to reduce costs. You know, where can we buy, you know, when peanut butter went on sale, you know, he's gobbled it up.
Yeah.
So I was always, you know, it's always been ingrained in me just to always look for a way to do something, you know, cheaper, you know, buy something cheaper, but still have the quality, right? You're still right. Looking for quality. So then I went to Clarkson University for accounting, graduated from there. I was a cost analyst right out of college for a paper manufacturer down in North Carolina.
Okay.
So I'd spend my time costing out production runs,
yep.
Paper. But then we'd also have 1 to 2 weeks of the month where I'd say a little, you know, maybe free time. I don't know if it's, you know, technically free. We had to work. So during that time, I'd try to find opportunities for me to justify my salary. So I'd look sure. at the expenses and see where I could reduce the expenses. You know, back then, this is back in the early 90s. And so I started looking at the phone bill. And I figured, you know, I'm very resourceful. And I it's like, if there's opportunities, I'll find it.
Right.
And what I really found out is that I'm not an expert in telephone. I wasn't an expert in telephone expenses, right? So I did meet someone down there in North Carolina that was an expert in telecom expenses. He actually owned a utility and telecom auditing business.
Mm.
And that's when I really started focusing on trying to find people who were experts in various expense categories because, you know, the CFO is, you know, expert in managing the budget and the cash flow, but each individual line item on the P&L, it's you don't have the expertise.
Right.
You know, no one in an organization has that level of expertise.
Right.
They might be great at negotiating, great at you know, finding where the invoices don't match up to the contracts, but to really know in you know, for every specific expense category what's possible, where to look.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that's you know. So anyway, so I was just basically doing that for my employers, looking for cost reduction opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably in early 2010, 2011, reached back out to this gentleman I met, you know, while I was looking at the expense, you know, telephone expenses. And I just started soliciting business for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2014, I started my own business because I had realized no one in the Syracuse area really was doing this. You know, I have competitors, obviously. Across the country, but no one was in this area looking at utilities and telecom
right.
you know, exclusively.
Right.
And then, so that was in 2014. And then over the years we've added, so we started with utility and telecom, then we added waste disposal experts, and then industrial laundry experts. And we pretty much have anywhere from four to five people in each category who are experts in only those areas.
So that's really one of the keys to the business model is having those subject matter experts that you're so right. Like even bigger companies that have larger purchasing departments, right? Those people are not necessarily subject matter experts in all these different areas. How could you be?
Right. Oh, exactly. Right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've worked for, you know, restaurant groups. I worked for large manufacturers. I mean, I've worked for Fortune 500 companies, large, you know, distribution companies. It's they just don't have this expertise. They really don't. I mean, and everyone on our team has at least 20 years experience in that area. They've either worked for those vendors,
right?
Like maybe it's waste management or whatever, or they've been trained on how to look for errors and opportunities in those expenses.
Right.
And then over the years, right, we just built a large benchmarking database. So we know, we take the emotion rate out of it and we have data to support when we go back to the vendors and say, you know, you're charging our client $5,000 a month. It should be $2,000, you know? And we have the data to prove it. We know what their neighbors are paying, what their competitors are paying.
Right. So over the time you've been in business, which is 11 years roughly,
yeah. now,
that you've been able to add to that database right. every time you're auditing.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. And even the auditors that we've added for waste and that sort, we've brought their data into awesome. The mix also. So
right.
it's over 20 years of data.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it keeps getting updated, right?
Sure.
Every time.
Sure.
And it's not just Syracuse. It's all over the country.
Right. So you can regionalize it.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your broadest reach for company? I mean, do you go all the way to the West Coast?
Oh, yeah. We're in L.A., Washington State, Florida, New York State.
Beautiful.
Texas.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. I love the business model.
Yeah.
So when you started, And I like to get into this with the small business people, right, that I interview, because I think it's fascinating, right, that there's always challenges at the beginning. Go back in your mind to when you started this thing and you went from getting a regular paycheck every week and knowing how much money's going in the checking account to now I'm dealing with cash flow and I'm on my own and there's no net here.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about some of the challenges you faced and how you overcame those when you started.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think one of the challenges is, you know, I thought, you know, given the business model, you know, it's a performance-based model,
right?
Cost savings, cost reduction, whatever you want to call it. It's like, who would not want to do this?
Right.
Right.
You thought it would sell itself.
Right. Right. It would sell itself. I think the biggest challenge is realizing that that's not necessarily what people want. I mean, they want the cost savings, but they get inundated with phone calls and emails from people who can save the money. And so it's, I really had to step back and figure out, okay, what, how do I do this? Like from a consultative standpoint, how do we, you know, it's not just saving them money. It's like helping them, you know, save money, you know, bring in more cash flow, but to do what? What are they going to do with it?
Right.
You know, almost get them to spend the money before they have it. And then also, we also, and I forgot to mention this at the beginning, not only do we do everything up front to find errors and opportunities, implement the changes that need to take place, but we monitor the bills going forward for at least 3 months or 36 months.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So to verify they're
to make sure they're getting the savings.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Continue to look at the vendor invoices.
Right.
Address any invoice issues.
Right.
Or even service issues that they have.
Right.
So we really not only save them money, save them time. So
right.
Added the saving time into the equation.
Right.
So it's like, okay, not only saving money, but it's not just like, we're not going to set it and forget it.
Right.
We're going to be your partner background in the background, right? We're not trying to disrupt operations.
Which, right, time is money.
Yeah.
Right? Because if they don't have to have somebody doing that, they can have that person or persons doing other value-added things for the business.
Right, right.
I want to go back to something you said, because you talked about overcoming the obstacle of, hey, every business owner, every executive is inundated with people trying to get their attention, saying, I can save you money doing this, that, or the other thing, right? And mm-hmm. I've sat on the other side of that desk, so did you, right? And we know what that's like. But what you said was interesting to me, that you, the way you overcame that obstacle was you helped them see the reward, right? So you helped them make an emotional connection to the buying purchasing decision to sign you on.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, go ahead, go ahead.
The point I want to make there is that is sales in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Right? I do sales development, and one of the things that I try to help people see who are doing sales is exactly that truth, which is nobody, no human being makes a buying decision, whether it's a stick of gum, a car, a new house, or a brand new plant, unless they have an emotional engagement in the decision.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
It's seeing the rewards and maybe sometimes seeing the consequences as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do this, what does that look like?
Oh, exactly. You're right. Right. Yeah. And I think that's very important, because that's another thing, right? You know, when I came out, you know, being an accountant, it's typically accountants are, you know, trying to be logical, detail oriented.
Yep.
And I even think it's like, this is logical. Why? How can you say no to this?
I can appreciate that being an engineer.
An engineer too. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, trying to bring the emotional aspect into it and the fear of them losing money every month. Because one thing I want to mention too, most of what we find is not refundable.
Right.
So even though you might be being overcharged, that doesn't mean it's the vendor's fault. It's your fault. The burden of proof is on the consumer.
So you're not looking backwards to go get money.
Well, we are. We do. Because there are certain things that are refundable.
Okay.
But there's a 36-month statute of limitations typically.
Right.
So every month that goes by is one less month you're going to recover. You
know, right.
You could have lost the money forever.
Right.
But so I'd say probably, it's hard to say, it depends on the category, but 30 to 40% of the time we'll find some refunds know, going back.
Okay.
Most of the savings and most of the financial benefit is going forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I know from recent conversations with you, you've been looking at some different things and growing the business and some new avenues to do that. What's new on the horizon? Where does Integrity Cost Consulting go from here? And what are you looking at doing as you move into the future?
Yeah, it's a great question. Instead of being like I always tell people, I think I mentioned this to you, I'm like a squirrel, just, you know, because we can help anyone who has spend in those four categories.
Sure.
Really. But trying to get a little bit closer, you know, try to narrow in certain industries. But I still have the fear of doing that. right? Because I don't want to get pigeonholed into, that's all we do is focus on that. So right now we have a campaign, it's called ICC Auto 500, trying to focus on auto dealerships across the country. Now, we just launched it in March now, and then the tariffs hit. So I don't know if this is a good or bad time, you know, because obviously tariffs are going to raise their costs and they're going to need to somehow offset that somewhere.
Right.
But then again, now they don't have a lot of time because now they're going to have inventory shortages and that sort of thing. So, so I'm trying to focus on in certain lanes. I mean, primarily we work with auto dealerships, restaurant groups, healthcare, manufacturers, nonprofits, commercial real estate. I keep going on. So trying to align myself with maybe some associations where, you know, I think we talked about the Northeast Dairy Association, manufacturing associations where we can just get in there and just add a lot of value to their members.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to, you know, just kind of shoot and spray all over, you know, to figure out, you know, who wants to save money type thing. It's, and who wants to have more control over their expenses.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really what we're trying to do too. Trying to bring transparency to their expenses. Cause a lot of people don't know. It's like, and I think you and I talked about this last week where, you know, and even for me, you look at your variance analysis.
Yeah.
And you see, you know, your budget is 20,000 and you're paying around, you know, your expenses, the actual expense around 20,000. It's like, zero variance. It's like,
We're good.
It's like, well, how do you know 20,000 is correct?
Right.
Oh, I don't know. But no one looks at that.
Right.
Right.
And I can relate to that. Because when we talked a couple of weeks ago, right, having coffee, right, I started my career as a young engineer doing variance analysis.
Yeah.
And when you gave that explanation, I'm like, yeah, you're spot on.
But I was guilty of it.
Yeah.
I was guilty of all these things. And being an accountant and, like I said, being resourceful and trying to, if there's a problem, I'll find it.
Right.
I had that mentality. So I see that as an objection I get or unspoken objection.
Right.
We're like, oh no, he's going to make me look bad. And really we're not. We're trying to help you be better at what you are, at what you do.
Right.
And actually take some stress off you too.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. I want to go back to a couple things you mentioned about the associations. And this is one of the many reasons why I love our friendship and connection, because we get together, it seems like every few months or so, and we'll get coffee. And we usually end up talking for well over an hour because we both just start furiously picking each other's brains and, hey, what are you doing? Hey, did you try this? And you mentioned about the association and a few of them, and we'll talk after today. I'll give you some more detail. But I've reached out to some of those associations thinking, yeah, those would be great potential clients for me too. Right. And you know, one of the things I'm getting at is by getting to know each other, we quickly determine that, guess what? Our client base is basically the same people, right? We're trying to get in front of the same people, the decision maker, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's the senior executive or the owner, ultimately that's who we're trying to contact.
Right.
And it could be big or small, right? Size of the company is not necessarily all that important as long as there's something there that we can help them with, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But we do have some commonalities and, you know, we've leveraged that and we've also shared with each other, you know, hey, oh yeah, you should talk to so-and-so for that, right? And so the value in that, and that networking is just incredible.
Yeah. No, I love talking to you. And I think that's the thing. It's like, at one point I was trying to add more services onto what we're doing. It's like,
right.
You get too far. You can't be an expert. We've already proven we can't be an expert in everything.
Right.
Right. And the more you expand, the more air, you know, potential problems you're going to have, resource issues and
right.
Just focus on what you're really good at and then have a network of people you can refer them to.
Right.
I mean, that's valuable because I'm always looking to add value to our clients.
Right.
You know, whether I can help them, you can, someone else can. Right.
Right. Right. And that's how that connection works.
That's
exactly.
Works.
And, but I think it's really key. What you just said is to stay focused on what you're really good at.
Right.
Right. And that's, you know, like I am not a financial guy, right? If I have a business owner that is looking to refinance their business or they need a cash infusion, I know people that can help them,
right?
And I will put them gladly in contact with them, right? My previous guest, Stephanie, who you met when you came in today, okay. Right? I have a client or a potential client that's looking, they need a grant for something. They're doing development, they're doing expansion, mm-hmm. whatever. They've got to buy equipment. I know somebody that can help you. I don't know anything about grants, but I know the right person.
Yeah.
And you're right. That's another value that we bring to our clients and potential clients, right? Once they connect with us, and that's huge.
Right, yeah, exactly. Just connect with us.
Right, right. We're bringing our whole network to the table.
Right.
When we sit down with a client, and that's a huge value.
Right. Yeah. And that's always been a challenge too, is trying to figure out what will get them to the table, what will get them on a phone call, what will get them to an in-person meeting.
Right.
Because it might not, because all I can save you money is I know it's overused, but what is their pain point? What are they trying to do?
Right.
You know, what do they need?
Right.
Do you need more money? Do you need grant? Do you need more people? What is it? Maybe I can't help you, but someone else can.
And you hit the nail on the head, right? It's, I learned the hard way early on that it's really less important what my elevator speech is. And it's more important for me to understand how to ask the right questions to find out what are their struggles? What is their pain point?
Yeah.
Right. What's holding them back from getting the results they're looking to get?
Right.
And it may be something I can help with and maybe not. Right. And maybe I just need to put them in touch with my friend Steve, my friend Stephanie, or another connection, right, that can help them. Or maybe I can help them.
Right.
And I've learned the hard way also that I look at it now, like maybe I don't gain a client, but maybe I've gained another contact and friend.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Right. That now maybe they're part of my network.
Right.
Right. And when somebody else comes across my radar, maybe they can help that person.
Yeah. And you're building trust, credibility.
Yeah.
We're all in this together.
Yeah. Thing, right? Yeah. I love, yeah. I know one person I know, I won't drop her name, but she calls herself a connector of dots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a connector of people.
Right.
Right. And yeah, I like to think that way. Right. Because ultimately it is about their pain point. And, you know, once you get people talking and you understand how to be a good listener and how to be empathetic, right. And understanding what they're feeling, people, once they understand and feel that connection, people typically love to talk about their business and what's, you know, once they know they have a sympathetic and empathetic ear.
Right.
Most people are willing to open up.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and the way I tell people is like, I'm very boring, so you don't want to listen to me. You know, I want to hear about you. But yeah, I think that leads into what I was, you know, what I wanted to say too is one thing I've added starting last year was with my clients, adding a quarter check-in point. Every quarter, check in for 15 minutes to ask those questions. Like, what, you know, here's what we're doing for you. We all know that. We have a monthly report. But what else do you need?
Right.
And that's where I can bring my, you know, network,
right,
and figure out, you know, where to put it, you know, where to connect those dots.
Right. Right. And, you know, I don't like to use it because it's an overused term, but I'll use it, I guess, because I can't come up off the top of my head with a better one, but it is really a win-win, right? It's we're able to help the client, right, and we're also able to help them see us in the vein of, hey, here's a partner. Right. Because we really don't want to be seen as just a vendor.
Yeah.
Right. I want you to see me as your partner because I want to be that partner.
That's a great
point. I
want
to help you achieve whatever you're trying to achieve.
Right. That's a great point. Yeah, it's really a partnership. And that's right. You know, try to, you know, I know it's like you said, it's maybe overused, but that's what I'm in it for.
Right.
You know, it's a partnership.
Right.
And I am truly trying to help them.
Right.
And, you know, and we put all of our resources into it and our money and, you know, if they look at all four categories, there's 24 people working for them.
Right.
For no, you know, we're not sure we're going to get paid.
Right.
Right. So
right.
It's like, I'm giving you at least that because they couldn't afford 24 people on their staff.
At the very least, they're getting a very detailed review of all those specific areas.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
With subject matter experts. Right. Right.
Absolute worst case, you'll know for sure if you're being charged accurately and paying the least amount possible going forward.
You know, thinking about that, I've never asked you this question. Have you ever had a client where you went in, did the full analysis and couldn't find any savings?
It's rare.
But it has happened.
Yeah, it has happened.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's kind of embarrassing because it was this one manufacturer, a local manufacturer. I won't mention their name, but tried over 3 years to get them as a prospect. So I figured I know I can help them. And we couldn't. I mean, we helped them at least verify.
Right.
That everything's fine.
Right.
They're clean. But I say 90% of the time we don't find anything, or we do find something.
Right.
It's 1 out of 10. It's high 95, 96% that we'll, because it's very rare that we don't find anything. Because if I don't think we can help them.
Right.
I don't want to waste their time.
Right.
Because we're wasting our time.
And you don't want to waste your time.
Right.
Well, and your people's time.
Right.
Could be working for somebody that you could save money.
Exactly.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So what's, you know, down the road, and you're not quite as old as me, but I know you're not going to do this forever, but you're not done yet.
Yeah.
You know, what's your vision for Integrity Cost Consulting 3 years from now, 5 years from now? You know, if we sat down and talked 3 or 5 years from now, what do you think it would look like?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you didn't give me this question ahead of time, so this is going to be
curveball.
Yeah, curveball. I can never hit curveballs. So
me neither. That ended my baseball career.
That's why I tried it. Golf. The ball just sits there.
Yep. Never saw another fastball after I saw that curveball. Right.
So I think, you know, yeah, 3 to 5 years, I still plan on, you know, doing. I don't see myself retiring. People say, when are you going to retire? It's like, I don't see myself retiring because I love what I do.
Yeah.
I love consulting. I love partnering with, you know, with you and just clients. So I really don't. The next 10 years, I plan on keep doing what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's a value add. Now, will I scale it back?
Right.
Possibly.
Right.
Right. But
you don't see yourself, you know, sitting somewhere in a warm, sunny climate, you know, year round playing golf 4 or 5 times a week.
Well, it depends where you are in the, you know, if I stay here in Syracuse, yeah, I'll probably, you know, in the summer.
Yeah.
I do try to play 3-4 times a week. But yeah, maybe I'll scale back. But, and like I said, there's a team of us. It's not just me.
Right.
You know, I couldn't do this by myself. So yeah, I'll probably scale back a little bit in maybe 5-7 years,
but not in the near future.
No, I don't see it in the near future. No,
it's fascinating. Yeah. You say that.
God willing.
Right. We don't know, but right. God willing, but I feel exactly the same way, right? I've got friends at my age, some of them even a year or two younger, that have already fully retired. Oh, when are you going to retire? And I've told them now, since I've started this business, I don't know if I ever completely will.
Yeah.
Right? Because what you just described, I love what I do, right? I love the fact that I get to meet new people every day,
mm-hmm.
get to learn new stuff all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I get to help people.
Yeah.
Right? Get to see their light bulb go on, get to see them achieve what they're trying to achieve. Yeah, I could see maybe, you know, late 60s, early 70s, maybe scaling back. Or, you know, I certainly even now try to keep a little bit of time so I can sneak out and play golf occasionally.
Yeah, right?
But yeah, I don't necessarily see myself fully retiring. I think that's the value of doing what we do and having our own businesses, that we do genuinely love what we do.
Right, right. And I'm very grateful. Each day I wake up and I am grateful for all my friends and people in my professional network, because if I was, you know, strictly working for a corporation and you know, in an office or a cube, whatever, I would never have met nearly the people I met.
Right. Wouldn't have had those opportunities.
No, there's no way. And just learn so much from now on, reading from them, and just, it's been an incredible learning experience.
Right.
So, I mean, I've grown tremendously over the last 10, 11 years.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's been awesome watching.
Not growing this way. I'm still growing. Actually, it's going the other way, right?
It's been awesome in the 3 years or so that I've known you to watch your business grow. And I don't think you're like a squirrel. I just think your mind is always going. And I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, because there's so many people you can help.
Right? Yeah. You're always looking at how can I reach more people?
Yeah.
Really, which is what you're always thinking of doing. I think that's awesome. It's fascinating to watch, and it's I'm appreciating, you know, you and your friendship.
Appreciate you too. Yeah.
I just want to say thank you for coming in. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I have.
Oh yeah.
So once again, we could probably talk for another 30 to 45 minutes or hour.
Keep it rolling, right?
Yeah. Like our usual coffees when we get together every few months. But
right.
And the last thing I'm going to say is, as soon as the weather breaks, we're going to get out there and play golf.
Definitely. So. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
All right, Steve. Thanks again.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate being here.